Space, the final frontier.
Well, those are some of the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Their multi-year mission to, you could do most of it from your head, right? But there's a little real-life action going on here. In the 2060s, that's when Star Trek took place, they had the technology to boldly go and inspect the final frontier. But the idea is not that far off. NASA is already working to meet a 2020 deadline for making a return trip to the moon and setting up a permanent base camp to launch missions deeper into space. But a group of engineers at the Johnson Space Center and the Ames Research Center are working to conquer yet another frontier. They call them near-Earth objects. We might call them asteroids. Pretty complicated stuff. You might need a rocket scientist to explain it all. Luckily, we have one. Rob Landis is an engineer at NASA's Johnson Space Center, one of the co-authors of the Near Earth Object Mission Feasibility Study. He's on the line from the Columbus Control Center in Germany. Hello, Rob.
Hello.
So are you a rocket scientist, or was I hyping your credentials, or perhaps insulting you?
Well, my academic background's in astrophysics and planetary science, but my real-life background, you know, the thing that pays the bills and pays the rent has been in mission operations, actually operating spacecraft.
And when smart guys like you get around and try to make the expression like, you don't need an Einstein or you don't need a rocket scientist, what job do you talk about? You don't need a telemetry expert?
Whatever they want to talk about, I try to ease on into the conversation. Yeah. I'm happy to talk about just about anything.
Well, today we want to talk about asteroids. And when you see asteroids in the movie, the situation is always that an asteroid's about to hit the Earth. We don't want to study asteroids because they're dangerous. We're just curious about them, right?
That's right. However, they do pose a threat to the Earth, and it's not a matter of if they'll hit the Earth, it's a matter of when. Extinctions are a fact of life, and the Earth is replete with history of mass extinction events. But they're also great learning tools and great research vessels for us. We go to the moon, we go to Mars, visit the planet Venus, and so on. These are processed bodies that have been around for quite a while. We have a reasonable understanding of their collisional history, and we have more to learn about that history and their geochemical makeup. However, asteroids are unprocessed bodies. They're the raw materials that actually formed the early solar system, and they're the remnants of that early solar system. And the near-Earth asteroids are remnants of the events that took place in the main belt of asteroids out between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. They're also easily accessible, easy to get to, in terms of what we call the delta V. That's the amount of energy or the amount of oomph it takes to get from point A to point B to point C and back in space than it is to go to, say, the moon or Mars. For a fraction of that energy it takes to land on the surface of the moon and come back, you can actually go to a number of asteroids.
Got it. Now, you say near-Earth objects. How near to Earth are asteroids that we want to study?
Well, by the strictest definition, a near-Earth object, which includes asteroids and comets, but 98% of these things are asteroidal in nature, by the strictest definition, those are objects that cross the Earth's orbit or come very close to the Earth. A subset of those objects are called potentially hazardous objects, or PHOs, and those are objects that come within 0.05 astronomical units of the Earth. Now, to give you a sense in kilometers, that's about 7.5 million kilometers.
How far away is the moon from the Earth?
The moon is about 400,000 kilometers away, or 240,000 miles away. And so
these asteroids are way further out there.
That's right. That's right. Some come within the moon's orbit, and in fact, one, the asteroid Apophis, in 2029, and I think in 2036, will dip below the Earth's geosynchronous satellites, which are up at about 22,000 miles above the surface of the Earth. So some do come closer. Some actually hit. There is one that hit in Tunguska in 1908, a remote region of Siberia, that had devastating effects.
Yes. I've seen the old black and white photos with trees flattened for miles around.
Oh, of course, yeah, of course.
They still talk of Tunguska up there. But here's a practical question for you. You have these asteroids that are, you know, half a football field long. They're spinning through space at 1,000 miles per hour. It seems it's easier to land on something like a moon that's kind of, it's not stationary, but we know about its orbit. How do you land on an asteroid?
Well, let me, first of all, the moon is going to be a very challenging place to go and land, and NASA's working on that right now to enable that landing in maybe 2019 or 2020. One of the things that Bob Gilruth, who is the Johnson Space Center director at the time after Apollo 17 came back, said, you know, if we ever do this again, going back to the moon, I think that people are going to find out just how hard it is. Now, going to an asteroid, you want to be careful about which ones you go to.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go to one that is a slow rotator, not too many jagged edges, has a relatively benign surface, and so on. So you do what you call a rendezvous and proximity operations, just like we do with the International Space Station. And then you want to dock to it. However, you don't dock to it like you do to the station because there are no docking mechanisms or anything like that. You'd have to match your rotation rate with the asteroid, and hopefully it's a slow rotator, something no more than 8 to 10 hours per rotation. And once that is matched and you come down to the surface, or berth yourself to the surface, anchor yourself to the surface, that would be one way. At first, though, we'd probably want to do things from a bit far off and telerobotically interact with the surface.
Wow. By the way, in NASA, the guy who's like what in normal life we'd say maybe not the brightest bulb in the bunch, do you say that guy's kind of a slow rotator?
I will now.
Yeah.
Thank you for the metaphor.
Jim's sort of a slow rotator. We're going to pull him along. Okay, I guess the other big question is this whole thing's about manned missions. We've sent unmanned missions to asteroids. What's the benefit of sending an actual astronaut to land on them?
Well, the greatest asset, I think, in exploration is the human element. It takes a lot more effort, energy, and money to put humans on these faraway places, whether it's the moon or near Earth asteroid or so on. But the great thing about humans is their powers of observation and the ability to make a judgment call. I work on both of the Mars rovers that we landed now, over 4 years now, and we would spend days, if not weeks, at a rock with one of the two spectrometers and the microscopic imager trying to determine what that rock is made of, what its composition was. Is it a sulfate? Is it a jarosite? Is it something else?
Yeah.
Whereas a human can make that call almost instantly, within seconds, and make a determination whether or not to bring that sample back home or leave it in place and move on to another sample. And humans can adapt and adjust accordingly, whether they're doing proximity operations or an EVA, a spacewalk at an asteroid or on the moon, whereas a robot is not imbued with that judgment. You have to command everything. I mean, if we could do this more easily, we'd have automatic lawnmowers in our front and backyards doing stuff.
Yeah, and then they take over, and I think I've seen that Will Smith movie. But thanks a lot. Rob Landis is an engineer at NASA's Johnson Space Center and one of the co-leaders of the Mission Feasibility Study. We're going to the asteroids. Thanks, Rob.
My pleasure.
Next on The Big Show, people are flying to other countries to have surgery. It's called medical tourism, and some insurance companies think it may be a good idea. That's coming up next on the BPP from NPR News. We'll be right back.